chickens in the houses, they got chickens in the trees, chicken in the pots, the Mottawog, the Petaloomies, out in Petaluma, spending my days. Oh, I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Tell me, how many eggs will a chicken lay? Now Marvin got me started, sold me my first hen. Now I got 4 and 20, and 24 more again. I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Oh, I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Tell me, how many eggs will a chicken lay? Chicken in the morning, it's chicken in the night. Weren't for chicken Petaluma, never would have reached its height. I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Oh, I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Tell me, how many eggs will a chicken lay?
Good evening and welcome to Mouthful, smart talk about food, wine, and farming here on KRCB Radio 91. Thanks for tuning in on this fine, gorgeous spring Sunday. I finally got to a farmer's market. I think I've only been to one this year because I've been laid up with this sprained ankle, and there's been a lot of rain, including rain on Sundays. And it's very hard to get around on crutches or limping in the rain. So it was really beautiful. Everything was gorgeous. The landscape is gorgeous. Apple blossoms, cherry blossoms, flowering quince, wildflowers. I was at Safari West yesterday. I was a special celebrity tour guide filling in for someone who was unable at the last minute to do it. And the wildflowers at Safari West are just spectacular. So it's a glorious time of year here in Sonoma County. And it is also our spring fundraiser. It's taking place from yesterday through next Saturday. It's not very long. We have a tradition recently, in recent years, on Mouthful that I really encourage you to go to krcb.org and become a member there at whatever level works for you. And I think we're all aware of this, but it's also, I think, good to touch base on it as frequently as we can. It's probably never been more important to support media, to support independent journalism, to be really active so that we don't lose the things that we care about. And in this case, it's not only national and international voices that you hear in our programming, but also our local voices. We have, I think it's over 40 locally produced shows. Mouthful is in its 22nd year, which is just staggering when I think of it. I think nearly every local show here is produced by a group of dedicated volunteers. I founded Mouthful. I have hosted it forever, and I've been producing it for about the last 6 or 7 years as well. And I love having the chance to have conversations, especially about all of the creative people in Sonoma County. And we're going to be talking to one of them in just a very few minutes. But please go to our website, krcb.org. Membership levels begin at just $30. They go up as high as you want. But we have a special $100 pledge level. We have lots of CDs as thank you gifts. And just pointing out one, you have to love this title. It's Chuck Prophet's latest, Bobby Fuller Died for Your Sins. I just want it for the title alone, but it's a really good song. There's a lot of really excellent CDs, and that's really just, you know, that's part of our communication with each other. We take it on faith that you will support the radio station that we bring to you, and when you do show your support with a bit of money, we give you some CDs. So there you go. I'm not going to do a ton of pitching tonight because it's 6:30. That's what we call it, pitching, when we're asking you for money. At 6:30, we have a very special guest. We have Dr. I have to look at his name. It's a little counterintuitive. Dr. Serums, and it always makes me giggle. It is not spelled like serum, but Dr. Navindra Serum, who is in San Francisco for the first annual maple syrup conference with the Quebec Federation of Producers. And it's an all-scientific conference. And we're going to be talking with Dr. Serums about what the consumer needs to know about maple syrup, including the really fairly remarkable health benefits. So that's coming up at the bottom of the hour. Right now, I want to introduce a fabulous photographer who lives in Grayton and has been doing some very interesting projects. And he and I talked about a potential upcoming project that ties right into Mouthful, and that is potentially photographing women farmers. And on that note, welcome to Mouthful. It's John Martin.
Thank you, Michelle. Thank you for having me.
And thank you for having the idea for that fabulous fashion show that took place at Sebastopol Center for the Arts on Friday.
Thank you. Yes, it was a lot of fun, and we were very surprised by the turnout. It was wonderful. The women were absolutely fabulous.
They expected about 100 people. They say there was probably about 500.
Correct, yes.
And what gave you the idea? And we should say it was, I think it was called
Aging
with Attitude, Style and Sass at 60 Plus.
Exactly, right.
And I know you also did you're having a photo show exhibit coming up.
That's correct.
At Christy Marks Gallery, I think.
That's correct. And it's on May 5th, 5 o'clock.
That's
and the same women that we're discussing right now will be in the show.
Oh, we are.
19 women.
Oh, okay.
Everyone has a large print in the show.
Okay.
And the whole show is just these women.
Mm-hmm. And one thing, I was in the show, I should say.
That's correct.
And
yes.
One thing is people in the audience later asked who made our clothes for us, who we borrowed them from. And the point of the show is that this is actually how we dress.
Correct.
It's just how we dress.
From our closet.
Yep, from our closet.
Right. Well, the project started at one of the receptions at Sebastopol Center for the Arts. I volunteer over there with the visual arts team. And part of my job is to take pictures at the receptions. And I saw this woman, very stylish woman, and I said, can I take your picture? It turned out that was Ellie Kilner.
Oh, yeah. Ellie, she's done things on KRCB.
Correct. So she said, look, why'd you take my picture? I said, I like your style. And from then on, then she said, well, I just happen to have a project I'd like to talk to you about, but I need a photographer. So then we had coffee and we talked about the project. And she said, I want to do this Women Over 60 project, Women with Style. And she said, we'd be interested. And I said, of course. So we did three sessions. And we did a total of 19 women. Mm-hmm. And, of course, we had no idea what we were going to do with this project. And after we were done doing the photography, then I was at a meeting at the visual arts team where we were discussing potential shows. And they said one of the shows coming up was 60 plus, artists 60 above, you know, mm-hmm. 60 plus. And I thought, well, that's interesting. And I spoke to Catherine, the director, and I said, I just finished a project of Aging with Attitude with women who are 60-plus. And I said, wouldn't it be fun to do a fashion show at the reception? And then, you know, it just went on like that, and it was approved, and that's how it started.
Mm-hmm. And it was really fun. One woman who was in it, Susan, she's 85.
Right.
And everyone's clothes were so interesting. I've loved clothes since I think I was born dressed. I've just always loved clothes my whole life. And so, but it was really fun to see other women with passions that maybe express themselves differently than I do, but are still really passionate about how they dress.
Well, it was wonderful because these weren't off-the-rack things that you could buy. It was a lot of these women, they go to different thrift shops or
sure.
they make
oh,
their
definitely.
Own work. They make their own clothing. So the it was really fascinating what they came up with.
Well, and, there's Diane Austin.
Right.
And Diane Austin has the... it's called
Multiple Threads. Correct,
and she's
right.
been upcycling clothing for many, many years. I wore things that I actually bought, but I do a lot of sewing as well.
Right.
There was Phyllis Beals, who is famous for the hats she makes.
Right.
But she's also got her own extraordinary style.
Well, they all had the style,
yeah.
different styles, and that's what made it so interesting. Every one of those women had a distinctive style,
mm-hmm.
Which made it wonderful to watch.
Mm-hmm. Now, I don't want to spend the whole time talking on that show, but I will talk more when we get a little closer to May 5th. We'll give the details of the reception so that even more people can come and crowd into the room. I want you to talk a little bit about your opera project, because I think that's really fascinating.
Of course. The opera book, the opera project, it culminated in a book. It's a funny story because when I started this project, I didn't know much about opera. Really, I have to go back a long time. And it started with a column, a Leah Garchuk column from mm-hmm. the Chronicle. The San Francisco Opera was looking for tall, thin men for the opera Carmen. And my wife was reading that, and she looks at me and she says, "You could do that." And I said, "Well, I've never been to an opera. I don't know anything about opera." And she said, "Why don't you just go?" So I went to the audition, and I walked in not knowing what was going to happen. And when I left, I was in Carmen. And that's how I learned about opera and started doing opera. And then I was just, you know, obsessed with opera after that. I just got turned on to opera, and I love it.
Mm-hmm.
But after a while, since I'm a photographer, I was watching the productions and how these come together. But what really fascinated me was that I would see the talent, the artists, the singers, come into the opera house through the stage door. They looked like pretty much anybody.
Mm-hmm.
You wouldn't notice them walking down the street unless you're a big opera fan.
Mm-hmm.
But then when they put on a costume, there's this magic transition, just remarkable
so
transition.
Transformative.
Absolutely. And then they become a this character, and I wanted to capture that.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to capture that. But I also, the problem was I wanted to do it in costume and full makeup.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the policy at the opera, and pretty much every opera house in the world, is once you're in costume, you cannot leave the opera house.
Mm-hmm.
So in order for me to do what I wanted to do, which was set up a studio and invite these people to come down to the studio off the stage and document what they're wearing, I had to set up at the opera house. That was the only way I'd be able to do this. But getting permission from the opera house to do what I wanted to do was really going nowhere because no one has ever done it.
Mm-hmm.
That was really another surprise. Ultimately, what I ended up doing was talking to the... I got to know the chorus people and the security people and mm-hmm. everybody down there. And I just gave them a heads up and I said, "I'm going to show up tomorrow with my big camera and lights and take pictures of the chorus and other people as well." And so I just did that. I just showed up one day with all my equipment at the stage door and an assistant. And then I set up in the basement of the opera house. And I figured, well, I'll either get some great shots or I'll get thrown out and that's the end of my opera career. But as luck would have it, through a combination of events, I didn't get thrown out. And then I spent the next 6 years photographing about 30 operas with the most fabulous talent,
mm-hmm.
you know, world
class. Were they all in San Francisco?
It was all in San Francisco because I literally had a studio set up in the mm-hmm. canteen at the opera house.
Okay.
And then I would invite them to come down.
Uh-huh.
It was absolutely wonderful, wonderful.
And then how did the book come about?
Well, the book, as luck would have it, one of the people I met at the opera, Mark Burstein, he happened to be a book agent, and I photographed him because I photographed not only the stars, like mm-hmm. the divas and the tenors, But I also photographed the chorus and mm-hmm. the supernumeraries. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you're familiar with a supernumerary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's like a spear carrier, like the extra in the movies. Uh-huh. That's what I was doing. I was a super. So he was watching what I was doing, and I took his picture, and he said, you know, this would be a great book. And I hadn't thought about a book. Uh-huh. And he said, I said, that's very interesting. I have no idea how to do a book. And he said, you know what? I'll be your agent. And then that was, it just took off from there.
Mm-hmm. Who published it?
Pardon?
Who published it?
It was published by Hal Leonard Books, uh-huh. and their division is Amadeus Press.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah, Amadeus perfect. Press is perfect.
Right. Yeah,
and the funny thing is, we made a book dummy to give to publishers, but there's so many things that were involved that it's really a miracle this book happened, because the first thing my agent said was you should have a book dummy to show publishers. We wanted
right,
to do a 35
yes.
page book dummy, get a designer, but that was like $5,000.
Yes,
so you know I would. Couldn't think about what to do, but then I heard about this project just starting up called Kickstarter.
Oh, okay. Yes.
Right? And so I did a Kickstarter project. I asked for $5,000 and I got it. Right? And with that money, I hired a book designer uh-huh. and we made 35 copies, had it printed. So he was at a publishing show convention and the Hal Leonard, a publisher, came over looking at the book dummy, and he said, can I have the book dummy? He said, this is really a lovely book dummy. And Mark said, sure. And then we didn't hear anything for 3 years.
Oh.
Nothing. Not a word.
Uh-huh.
And all of a sudden, meanwhile, I've gone through three different publishers that we had approached, and two of them wanted me to pay for the publishing, right?
Which that's we're a talking, bad deal.
That's a bad deal. And then the other one, I just didn't like how they were trying to promote the book and how they wanted to put the book together. I wanted this glorious big coffee table book with the finest printing and gorgeous color. I really wanted to accent the costumes and the detailing of the costumes and the characters mm-hmm. and the makeup. Really spectacular. And they just didn't get it. So I dropped them.
Mm-hmm.
But then Hal Leonard came around and called up Mark, and he said, are you still looking for a publisher? And Mark said, yes. And there you go. We went with Hal Leonard, and there's the book.
Mm-hmm.
It was really amazing.
And what year did it come out?
2012.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so still fairly recent.
Yeah, I think it's 2012.
But some people think, you know, like last year is a done deal. But I think, you know, that's pretty recent. Great. And tell me about your interest in photographing women farmers in Sonoma County.
Well, generally, I'm just fascinated in people. And I'm also interested in chefs. And then I started thinking about farmers. And when you think farmers, the general idea is you think of a man farmer or something like that. But then the thought of young women farmers, I said, now what an interesting concept, because you don't hear much about that. And generally when I do a project or portrait project, I like to go with people who are under the radar that you don't hear much about.
Mm-hmm.
And so that immediately intrigued me. I thought that would be a very interesting project.
It is, and it's also prescient, I think, in that a lot of the new generation of farmers that are coming up in Sonoma County and elsewhere are women. So I think it's really just a great idea, fabulous idea. And I have promised you that I'm going to connect you with a bunch, and I'm still going to.
Oh, I'm all for it. I'm ready to go.
Uh-huh. What other kind of work do you do? Do you do contract? I mean, you know, where people say, hey, I need a photographer for this event. Do you,
you
do
know,
that sort of thing?
These days, as a photographer, I have to do pretty much everything.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of times I do copy work for artists where I copy paintings,
sure.
things like that, or sculptures. Since I'm up here, I also photograph wine bottles.
Mm-hmm.
And then I cover events like the American Heart Association. I do that. And then I do portraits. And mm-hmm. especially I've been doing a lot of author portraits for poets.
Uh-huh. Oh, for poets.
Right. And then when I spare time, I dabble with things. There is an interesting project I'm working on right here in Ronett Park. And this is called The Resurrection Roller Girls. Now, over at Cal State,
yes,
they have a roller derby team, mm-hmm. the Resurrection Roller Girls, and I started photographing them with the full studio setup because I wanted to take them off the rink and put them on the full setup with the black paper and studio lighting. Mm-hmm. And then I found out they had junior roller girls, and I said, well, that's very interesting. So I photographed them, too.
Mm-hmm.
And then before you knew it, I was a fan of roller derby, so I go to the bouts. There's one coming up, as a matter of fact, in about a week. And I love roller derby, and I love these women. These are my girls, the Resurrection Roller Girls. Go, girls. They're just great.
That's so interesting. It's something I know nothing
exactly
about. That's nothing whatsoever.
My job is to put it out there.
Uh-huh.
Because what other sport can you have big women who excel at this sport? Mm-hmm. And they're part of the team. And everybody is like, wow, yeah, you go, go, go. I mean, it's wonderful to watch. It's absolutely wonderful. Okay. And the age limit is from 18 to like 50.
Mm-hmm.
And they're still on the team.
It's amazing. And I know you have two websites. You have John Martin Fine Art.
Right.
And there's two photographs on the homepage. And what is the opera, I assume, that has the four people in masks?
That was from the opera Macbeth.
Really? Oh, wow.
Right.
Interesting.
It was a very interesting opera with
that has to be
great costumes.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Great costumes. And these are all supers.
Uh-huh.
And I know them all. I know all those mm-hmm. guys. And the fun thing was to get them on the studio on the set, and what was remarkable, you have these world-class singers and they'd come down and they'd stand there on my paper and they go, what should I do?
Sure.
You know, they're looking at me and these are like people who've been doing opera, you know, live, and they're asking me what should I do. So I would look at them and I said, well, look, you're dressed in this costume, this is in the second act, just be in character. And because I knew the opera, I was in the opera. And that was it. Once I said be in character, boom. Just like that, the magic happened.
Well, it's really fascinating. The book is beautiful. It sells it. It's a full-color, oversized book, gorgeous photographs, cover price of just $34.99. And you have two websites. You have the one, John Martin Fine Art, and then you have your commercial website.
And that's jfmdigital.com.
jfmdigital.com. Well, time flies on Mouthful. We are out of time. It's getting ready. We're going to move. I'm going to do a little talking to you about our membership drive, and then we will, at 6:30, we will be talking to Dr. Serums. John, thank you so much for taking the time to come in, and I actually have another project I'd love to talk to you about. I think you will love it.
Oh, absolutely.
It's something no one has photographed before, and I've been thinking about this for at least a decade. I want to be like, I'm not the photographer. I want to be the director, the person who makes it happen, and then I want a fabulous photographer to help me, and you're just that person.
Excellent.
And I can't tell you over the air what it is. It's got to be a secret.
Okay, that's fine. So as they say in the business, let's talk.
Let's talk.
My
okay.
people will talk to your people.
There we go. I have one people. It barks.
Okay.
So I will talk to you soon.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for having me.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. And I'll see you, if not sooner, I'll see you on May 5th.
Excellent. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. And now we're going to talk. We're going to talk about KRCB, about you are listening right now. There's only really one question to ask. Well, there's two questions to ask yourself. Am I a member? If the answer is no, then you have one more question. Do I want to make a phone call? Or do I want to go to the website? It's very easy. It doesn't take very much time at all. And you can listen to Mouthful uninterruptedly if you are able to go onto the website at the same time. And that is krcb.org. Easy to do. We have membership levels starting at just $30. We have 30, 40, 60, 80, 100. 100 is just $9 a month, which comes to a total of $108 per year. Mary, you were going to add something.
We'll take anything.
And that was the next thing. We will take anything. I remember one time it was on when I was doing my music show, Red Shoes Radio at the time, and a woman loved the show and she called me and she says, I'm really broke. Can you take $10? I said, absolutely. And that $10 makes us really happy. It's about community. It's about being able to listen to your neighbors, your friends, people you may see on the street. Talk about the music you hear locally, the farms and farmers markets, and food that you eat locally. It's not pre-programmed from some other area. And you all know that, you know, Congress just voted to defund Planned Parenthood. Can defunding Corporation for Public Broadcasting be far behind? They've been threatening for decades to do it, just like they were threatening for decades to defund Planned Parenthood. That's already happened. So it's a really important time. I hope that you will join me, show your support for Mouthful, and take a minute to go to krcb.org. Or if you want to, you can even call. You can call 707-584-2020. There's a very good chance that somebody will answer that phone. Again, that's 707-584-2020. This is something I've given 22 years of my life to. There's not a penny. The only money involved in Mouthful is what I spend. And I spend it in all kinds of ways. And I have a great team. I've had fabulous producers, fabulous engineers over the years, all just a really passionate group of volunteers so that we can talk to you about Sonoma County food, beer, wine, farming, fishing, growing, gardening, and sometimes art and photography. So we're going to take a musical break. This song fits very neatly into what we're doing today, but the fit only takes place in my twisted little brain. But I think you will enjoy Jonathan Richman and the Modern Lovers with their classic song, Roadrunner. And if all goes well with the technology, we will be back in just a couple minutes with Dr. Navendra Serums. Dr. Serums. So, krcb.org, that's it. I can race you. I bet you can become a member before we get him on the phone. Be right back.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Road runner, road runner. Going faster miles an hour. Gonna drive past the Stop and Shop. With the radio on. I'm in love with the modern world. Massachusetts when it's late at night. And the neon when it's cold outside. I got the radio on, just like a roadrunner, going around the highway. I walked by the Stop and Shop, then I drove by the Stop and Shop. I like that much better than walking by the Stop and Shop, cause I had the radio on. I felt in touch with the modern world, I felt in love with the modern world. I felt in love with Batapet and Rosendale, cause I had the radio on. I felt like a roadrunner with the radio on. Now I said hello to the spirit of old 1956. It was patient in the bushes next to 57. Well, the highway was my only girlfriend, cause I went by so quick. And suburban trees were out there, and consequently it smelled like heaven. So I said, roadrunner once, roadrunner twice. We're in love with this feeling now. It will be our land. All right, now we can tell about our love, you man.
Radio on.
I got the AM.
Radio on.
I got the power. I feel the feeling now.
Radio on.
I feel the feeling and it's feeling all right now.
Radio on.
And I feel in touch with the modern world. Okay, let's go to our room 128. Can you feel it out in Needham now? Out in Route 128 by the power line. It's so exciting there at night, with the pine trees in the dark. It's so cold here in the dark, with 50,000 watts of power. We go by faster miles an hour, with the radio on. Road runner, road runner.
Radio on.
Going faster miles an hour. I'm
right by the Stop and Shop with the radio on. See, I'm in love with the modern world, Massachusetts when it's late at night, and the neon when it's cold outside. See, I have the radio on like a roadrunner. Now, what do you think about that, you guys?
Radio on.
Good. We got the AM.
Radio on.
I think we got the power, got the magic now.
Radio on.
We got the feeling of the modern world.
Radio on.
We got the feeling of the modern sound.
Radio on.
The sound of the modern radio feeling.
Radio on.
Late at night. Got the sound of the modern loneliness.
And I think we are on with Dr. Serums.
Sure.
I am speaking with Dr. Navinda Serums. Am I pronouncing your last name correctly?
That's correct, Michelle.
Serum. Okay, great.
S-E-R-E-M. Yep, yep, yep.
Tell us about the conference that was taking place today. I understand that it's the first annual conference of the Quebec Federation of Maple Syrup Producers?
Not quite. This is actually the first Global Maple Symposium,
okay,
which is being held at the American Chemical Society meeting.
Excellent. What is the connection between the Chemical Society and maple syrup?
Well, the American Chemical Society, you probably may not know, it's the world's largest organization in terms of membership, over 157,000 members. It has different divisions, and within the ACS, the Division of Agricultural and Food Chemistry, you know, we meet to discuss nutritious and safe and sustainable foods.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, maple fits right smack in the middle of that division. So, you know, I organized and chaired today a first ever, as I said, global symposium focused entirely on maple research.
And what is your research? What's the focus of the research? Is it about nutrition, about harvesting, production?
More about nutrition and biological effects, Michelle. Within the symposium, we had 12 talks. This was just a group of scientists from all over the world, primarily, of course, from Canada and the USA. That makes sense because, as you may know, maple syrup is only produced in eastern North America.
And that's the only place.
Canada and Quebec.
That globally, those are the only locations.
Yes, maple syrup is only produced in North America, in eastern North America, primarily in Quebec, the province of Quebec in Canada.
Mm-hmm. And then I guess we have some from the United States in Vermont, Maine,
for sure,
and New Hampshire.
Sure. Yep, the New England states and New York for sure, yes. But again, you know, the 100% of the maple syrup in the world comes from this part of the world. And again, you know, Canada leads the production, followed by the USA.
Mm-hmm. What are some of the nutritional discoveries that have been made recently?
All right, Michelle. So I want to be cautious here to all the listeners. This is a sweetener first and foremost. We don't encourage, you know, large consumption of any sweetener or any sugar. So, however, though the fact that we wanted to really let people know is that, listen, this is not pancake syrup. This is maple syrup. It's a natural sweetener produced by boiling the sap collected from maple trees, and during that processing, you're creating a lot of flavor, but obviously, if the plants, like many plants do, produce antioxidant compounds within its bark and in its sap, then those compounds will persist in syrup. You're just concentrating it down. So, mm-hmm. our work has shown that, you know, maple syrup, pure maple syrup, contains a large diversity, a cocktail of multiple antioxidant molecules.
Mm-hmm.
And just to add, Michelle, I'm sorry to interrupt. That,
no, you
also,
didn't.
Yes. Also, if you think of sap, it's like the lifeblood of the plant, of the tree, of the sugar maple tree. It's moving nutrients. So of course, it's sucking up minerals from the soil. There's vitamins and minerals and amino acids and phytohormones and of course sucrose, because it's a sweetener. But there's also some complex carbohydrates and then all of these antioxidant molecules that I just told you about.
What's the method? We see pictures and, you know, I have a vivid visual imagination. So I think of a bucket, you know, and a little almost like faucet on the side of a tree. The sap flows.
Yes.
Is that at all like what happens?
Oh, boy. You that's moms and pops. It still happens a lot in the eastern North American region. You know, people would tap the trees, but now it's a highly modernized and highly high-tech industry where there are vacuum tubes that kind of takes the sap from the plant and then from the tree, and then they kind of boil it down. So really high-tech, you know, people would have hundreds of acres of sugar maple that they would tap. It's very sustainable, organic, I think, because, you know, there is no pesticides on these trees. These trees live for hundreds of years. So, mm-hmm. Yes, they collect the sap and then they just boil it down.
Mm-hmm. And what time of year? Does that happen in the spring with the spring thaw?
Yeah, exactly. So I, as I told you, you know, it's only produced in this part of the world for mm-hmm. reason number one. The plants are only, sugar maple, the species, it's only found in this part of the world. It's endemic. The eastern North America, so you wouldn't find it on the West Coast. That's point number one. We have the plants here.
Mm-hmm.
Point number two is that you need this freeze-thaw cycle. So it happens. Sap flows the most when you have cold nights and warm days. So it's a very narrow window of opportunity, about 3 weeks, late winter into early spring. So I think we're well past tapping. It's just happened already.
Oh, it has. Interesting.
Yes.
And then what is the impact on the trees themselves of the process?
It's very sustainable. So this, you know, this is a North American crop, as I said, agricultural crop. It's been done for centuries. You know, starting, you know, back in the day when slavery was being abolished, maple sugar and maple syrup actually played an important role because cane sugar was associated with slavery and slave labor at that time. But the impact on the tree is very minimal. You know, the farmers and the producers have kind of figured out how many taps per tree, and then they rest them in between. So maybe 2 to 3 taps per trees, and then, of course, you know, they think that's enough for them to get what they need to do from a particular maple tree.
Mm-hmm. And when people are buying maple syrup in the grocery store, you often see grade A and grade B and a couple of other things as well. What does somebody need to know about the labeling of maple syrup?
So first of all, they need to know that pure maple syrup is different from pancake syrup. A lot of people do not know that.
Oh,
if you're
dear.
Not from the New England, you know, or Eastern North America, like I'm from the Caribbean, so it doesn't exist for us. I thought that pancake syrup flavored with maple was maple syrup. So that's for you. Want pure maple syrup? You know, it's pricey, but you get what you pay for, and you pay for what you get. It's a natural product. You need 40 liters of sap to become 1 liter of syrup. So that's pure maple syrup is number one. Number two, it depends on your taste. Some people like the lighter grade. I myself like the darker grade. But the color changes, and we have found that the darker the grade, the more of these antioxidant molecules, as you would imagine. You know, like any foods, the more colorful they are, the more the high concentration of these compounds.
And is the darker grade the grade B?
No, they go all the way. Well, the grading has changed a little bit. You know, different states in the USA and, of course, in Canada, they use different grading system. I think there is some look into kind of having a uniform system for both countries. But you could have, you know, the light or the amber and then the very dark, you know, the grade A or AA and so on. It's based on light transmission. But the darker grade could go all the way up to maybe B, and there's a C. And then a D, which is an industrial grade, which, you know, is just used for not on your pancakes, but for other purposes.
Yes, probably for industrial food production.
Yes, yes, yes. So remember, because the window, again, is so short, 3 weeks, the plant is starting to bud, okay? And if you continue, you could still get sap, but the flavor is a little bit off. That's why, it gets darker, you know, and then the taste changes, and you know, we could continue, but then people may not like it as a topping for pancake. But hey, let me put in a plug, Michelle. It should not only be used on top of your pancakes. This is a very diverse natural sweetener. Sweeten your coffee with it. Put it in your salad. Use it as a garnish. In the marinade, and you have tons of cuisines and gastronomy techniques that you could use with this natural sweetener.
Absolutely. I make a really delicious maple syrup and bacon vinaigrette that is fabulous on all kinds of salads, but also it's really good on grilled chicken. I'm a longtime fan of real maple syrup, so I was thrilled with this opportunity.
There you go. And if you drink responsibly, you can actually enjoy it in a cocktail, too.
Absolutely. In fact, maybe I'll try that tonight. I'm curious. I'm curious about the environment. If there are any current environmental or climatic challenges that producers are facing.
Yes. There is some anecdotal evidence, Michelle, that because we're having, you know, different warmer winters, that the window, again, it would... that window is getting shorter. Now, I don't have any published data to support this, but there is, again, you know, you'll hear farmers complaining from year to year that this year the production is lower than the other years and so on. So, indeed, I think you can actually, again, you know, you can see the differences where, you know, instead of 3 weeks, it may become 2 days less than 3 weeks just because, you know, it's just not flowing as profusely.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And then you have, there's a really vast website of that the Quebec Federation maintains. You have a lot of recipes there.
Absolutely. I love maple.com. Yeah, if you go to the Canadian, now again, because the Federation in Quebec, again, they are the big muscle for maple syrup production. They're the ones who are really, you know, championing this forward, and they have tons of stuff on their website. Please go and check it out. You know, it's a diverse food. And again, you know, it is a sweetener. We don't want you to guzzle, just to drizzle. But if you're looking for a nice sweetener to drizzle, then this is the one that I use and I recommend.
I have to tell you a sort of odd personal story. I think it was 2 years ago. It was in the winter, and I began craving maple syrup. And I don't have much of a sweet tooth. I don't eat much ice cream or anything. For about 10 days, I would get up in the middle of the night and take a drink of maple syrup out of the bottle. And
you know, it's funny that you said that. Someone asked me once, if I'm on an island and I only had one food, what would I choose? I said maple syrup. You know why? It has, you know, if there's only one food, it has everything that you need. Well, literally, it has sugar, which is energy, right? It has vitamins and minerals and amino acids and organic acids and these antioxidants. It's the one food that has a lot of different things in it, macronutrients, micronutrients, and phytonutrients.
Well, it was really odd because I'd never craved honey. I'd never craved anything like that. And after about 10 days, it went away. So I figured there must have been something that my body really needed, and it knew that was the one place I could get it.
Hey, I appreciate that because I'm very committed to maple research. So, you know, it's a cultural, you know, apart from the economic impact it has to this region of the world, you know, it's also culturally linked with the native peoples who were here. This is one of the crops that was not introduced by the Europeans. So it was started by the indigenous people. And I think, you know, it signifies the coming of spring. You know, you could see kids eating maple taffies that they put in snow, and it's just a wonderful experience. So again, you know, expand your horizon with this natural sweetener. I think you wouldn't regret it.
Well, I think it is absolutely wonderful. I really apologize for our not so good signal. I hope we will have a chance to talk more about maple syrup when we have a better connection. And I really appreciate you taking the time. I know the symposium was all day today, and you're probably ready to have a nice dinner. So I really appreciate this.
And a maple cocktail, too.
Maple cocktail.
Thank you, Michelle. Have one
for me. Thank you so much, and I will be in touch.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. So it's just me now? Okay. I do apologize. Can you pod down my headphones a little bit? Because they're blasting in my ear now. That's much better. Sometimes phones work really well. Sometimes phones don't work so well. But what a warm man with so much wonderful knowledge. I want to tell you a little bit about what you can find on their website. Maybe you can go there with me. It is called Pure Canada Maple, and it has talks about the benefits of maple syrup, talks about how it's produced. But then it goes in and it has all these different recipes. And some of them are really, let's see, I'm going to scroll down. Oh, there's pumpkin cheesecakes. There's a lot of sweet things, but there's also scallops, a carrot and zucchini salad, mashed potatoes that has a little bit of maple syrup in it, maple granola. There's even a crustless maple vegetable quiche, General Tso's chicken in maple chili sauce. And at home, I can tell you, you can make a fabulous barbecue sauce using maple syrup as the sweetener. There is Japanese-style skirt steak, one of my favorite things in the world. And it's a teriyaki marinade that uses maple syrup instead of one of the other sweeteners you might use. Mango black bean salad with sesame vinaigrette. Maple butternut squash and apple soup. Maple coleslaw, and there's even maple pulled pork, and you can put some of that maple coleslaw on top of it to do it sort of North Carolina style if you put enough vinegar into that maple syrup. It's a really fun ingredient, and if you listen to Mouthful, you know that I write for the Press Democrat. One of my columns always has several recipes, and I will be doing something about maple syrup later in the month of April, so you can take a look there. And now I might see if I can coax Mary, who has so nicely filled in. Mary Moore Campagna, did I say that right? She has so nicely filled in because Mouthful's engineer, Anthony, needed the night off. And why don't we chat a little bit about the membership drive and what it means to us right now at this rather scary time in the history of America.
Well, we try to think of it as an opportunity.
Oh, there you go.
You know, it's a challenge. It's a problem. But no, we're going to reframe this. It is an opportunity, and it is scary. I mean, there's no getting around that. But I think, Michelle, that you alluded to something earlier that is really important, and that is that we have a large team of really dedicated volunteers, volunteer radio programmers, radio hosts, producers, people who answer the phone, and they're all working to make this happen. Mm-hmm. And what it takes is the support of the community, and that's what we're asking for.
Yeah, and you know, one of the things we've seen with the election going in a direction that we really didn't think it was going to go in, a lot of people have woken up, and they've woken up to the impact of making a contribution, whether it's going out and standing on a street corner for something that you believe in, like the Women in Black do on Fridays in Sebastopol, or whether it's finding an organization where you can volunteer and really feel like you're making a palpable difference. And one of the things that I found quite disturbing is that certain people in positions of power are denigrating, very deeply denigrating, journalists and people who work in the field of searching for and conveying truthful information to people. And that means, I mean, I've noticed if you ever go to the New York Times website, they have on their homepage, they have this little square that said, honest journalism, professional journalism has never been more important than it is right now. And I think that that is the same thing can be said for a radio station where you can pick up the phone and call the radio station and someone in your community actually answers and you can talk about what is happening in your community and expand from there to your county, to your region, to your state, and to your country and go from there to the world.
You know, that's an interesting analogy, Michelle, because I think what's happening in both cases is that there has become this sort of cultural norm that says news or information on, you know, radio or anything doesn't need to be produced. It just happens. Well, no, it doesn't just happen. And it takes a lot of energy and a lot of effort and a lot of resources. And that's why something like KRCB in particular and public broadcasting in general is so important. And that's why we're appealing to you to become part of this movement, to become a member. I mean, Michelle had it right. She said the questions you need to ask yourself are, am I a member? And secondly, if I'm not, am I going to pick up the phone or go to the website? And the other question I think I would ask is, why am I not?
Why am I not? And it's maybe you just haven't got around to it. We're all really busy. And I should say 707-584-2020 is the number. Sean, our marvelous program director and station manager, is here. He's actually answering the phone. He works so hard. 707-584-2020 if you would like to become a member or renew your membership or even make an additional contribution that way. But also a very easy way is krcb.org. That is krcb.org. Very easy to do.
And the nice thing about krcb.org/donate is that you can actually see some of the different thank you gifts and some of the levels of contribution. There are many of them. We have something for virtually every budget. And as Michelle said earlier, she was referring to somebody whom she had talked to some years back who said they had, you know, no money. Would $10 be okay? I would venture a guess that that $10 represented a larger percentage of her income.
Absolutely.
Than, you know, a couple of hundred of somebody else's.
Absolutely. That was a woman who was very thoughtful about every penny she spent, and she wanted to make that contribution. I thought that was so sweet. There's another aspect of what has been going on nationally and to some degree internationally with, in a way, the rug pulled out from under journalism and people who listen. I was at the farmer's market today, and I'm not going to say what stall it was. I don't want to
point fingers.
No, I don't want to point fingers or embarrass anyone. But a customer was asking about something that was being sold. And as it turns out, it was something that I know a whole lot about and trust this purveyor, love this purveyor's product, have used this purveyor's product for many, many years. And the woman had become acquainted with some of the health products, but she tried to tell her friends who were in the health profession, and they didn't want to believe her. It's like, well, how do you know the person selling that to you isn't just pulling your leg? And there was all of this suspicion and willingness to say, oh, yeah, that's not true. They're just pulling your leg to sell something. So there's the cynicism that is pervasive in the country now, and we know who to blame for that. We don't need to say the name again. But who can you trust? You know, who can you trust? And I have felt, I always tell people, you want to know where your food is from, know your farmer. You want to know about those eggs that you're going to buy. If you can, buy from a place where you can see the chickens. I just went to Rosenthorne today and got 2 dozen of the most gorgeous, randomly shaped and colored eggs from Carol and her marvelous chickens. When I buy tea from a company called Pure Puer that relocated to Sonoma County a few years ago. They are direct. They don't buy from distributors. Yang Su, and they've been on the show before. She is in China again right now. She goes directly to China. She reads Mandarin. She reads Cantonese. She speaks both languages, and she buys directly from the farmer. That's what I bring you on Mouthful, and really, that's what KRCB brings you around the clock. And all we need is for you to bring your open ears, and once or twice a year, your open checkbook.
You know, that's an interesting point because you said, you know, if you want to know where your food comes from, get to know your farmer. If you want to know where your news comes from, get to know your radio station.
Absolutely. That is the way to do it. And we are just about out of time. We will go out with Mouthful's theme song. I haven't talked about it in a long time. It is called Local Color. It is by Solid Air, and it's actually inspired by Mouthful. I was so flattered. But it's about exactly what we're talking about, that so much is at risk if we don't know about it and support it. That's the theme of Mouthful, and it always has been. So you have a great week. You take care of yourself. Throw us some money if you can, and meet me back here next Sunday at 6 for another episode of Mouthful. Smart talk about food, wine, and farming here on KRCB-FM Radio 91. And in the fields of Bendigo Valley,
This land once open and free. Well, they got pictures in the museum of local color that used to be.